So, and that's going on a daily basis in Vrindavan, and even in the spiritual world, it may be going on, or at least they think it's going on, so they're constantly in a state of stress. So, you have to get ready for that, because that's what goes on in the spiritual world. People are in anxiety. Anxiety in the material world is not good for you. Anxiety in the spiritual world is good for you. It increases the loving propensity, loving attachment towards Krishna. And this is always going on. Here's another example. After the Putana witch had been killed, some friends of Mother Yashoda inquired from her about the incident. Mother Yashoda at once requested her friends, please stop. Don't bring up the incident of Putana. I become distressed just by remembering this incident. The Putana witch came to devour my son, and she deceived me into letting her take the child on her lap. After that, she died and made a tumultuous sound with her gigantic body. So here's another. Here's not exactly that the demon's there or the demon's coming, but just this thing that you just imagine that there's a little baby, and some demon comes to eat your child in disguise, and you invite him in, and you put your baby in the lap. So that's like something that sort of eats in a mother's mind for a long time. Here, the problem is it just keeps eating on her mind forever. So anytime someone brings it up, it just like places her into more dread, and that just increases the love. It keeps things going. It's like water. Water that doesn't move becomes stale, so it has to keep moving. So all of these different types of other ecstasies, they keep the Sai Baba, the original loving relationship with Krishna, they keep it constantly moving. They stir it up all the time, and that way it's always fresh. And that gives increased taste to, in this case, Mother Yashoda, or the devotee, and it also gives increased relish with Krishna. Here's the last one, dread. In the ecstasy of devotional service in dread, the unconstitutional symptoms are unconstitutional symptoms. Some Prabhupada uses these words because there are, again, very difficult to find really suitable words for certain Sanskrit terms. Drying up of the mouth, exuberance, glancing behind oneself, concealing oneself. These are the unconstitutional means that they don't last for long. They're there for a little while and then they go. Searching after the endangered, lovable object and crying very loudly. Some other unconstitutional symptoms are illusion, forgetfulness, and expectation of danger. In all such circumstances, the ecstatic dread is the steady or constant factor. In other words, there's always this dread is there, but sometimes one will cry, sometimes one will be bewildered, sometimes the mouth will dry up, and then sometimes it will be wet, sometimes one will glance behind oneself or conceal oneself. These are just different symptoms. The dread is going on, but these characteristic symptoms come and go. Such dread is caused either by offenses committed or by dreadful circumstances. In other words, offenses committed to Krishna or dreadful circumstances threatening Krishna. Offenses may be committed in various ways, and the dread is felt by the person who has committed the offense. When dread is caused by a fearful object, this fearful object is generally a person who is fearsome in his features, nature, and influence. An example of an object which caused ecstatic dread is the Putana witch. Dread may be caused by the mischievous demoniac characters, such as King Kamsa, and it may be caused by great powerful demigods, such as Indra and Shankar. Demons like Kamsa fear Krishna, but their feelings cannot be described as ecstatic dread in devotional service. So, this is just a last sentence, bears some explanation. And someone may say, well, I'm fearing, so is that rasa? And the answer is no. Because it has to be bhakti rasa. It can't be something else. And what is bhakti? These different symptoms, which are the first thing that's described in this book, the characteristics of pure devotional service, they have to be favorable towards Krishna. The mood here of Tamsa towards Krishna is not favorable. He's afraid of Krishna. He's dreaming about Krishna, that Krishna is going to kill him. But he wants to kill Krishna first. So he's not favorably disposed towards him. So just because you're afraid of Krishna, just because you have some type of interaction with Krishna, doesn't necessarily establish that as rasa. Rasa has to fulfill these qualifications. Anya abhilasita shunyam, and that is that one has to be free from all abhilas, all desires. So you have to be purified. Jnana, karmari, anavritam, so no desire for liberation, or enjoying the fruits of one's activities, or mystic perfection. Anukulyena. And whatever you're performing, Krishna Nishidhanam, is favorable towards Krishna. Arjuna's attitude is favorable towards Krishna. So therefore, bhakti uttama. Therefore, it can't be termed uttam bhakti. We use the word pure devotional service, uttam bhakti, para bhakti, it means the same thing. Ultimately, that bhakti which is capable of generating love for Krishna, and then the gas continues. Well, let's just do that. It is understood from authoritative sources that an attachment for Krishna because of feelings of disgust sometimes presents a ghastly ecstasy in devotional service. The person experiencing such ecstatic love for Krishna is almost always in the neutral stage of devotional service, or shantaras. A description of ecstatic love caused by ghastliness is found in the following statement, quote, "This person was formerly interested solely in the matters of lust and sense gratification, and had perfected the greatest skill in exploiting women to fulfill his lusty desires. But now how wonderful it is that the same man is chanting the name of Krishna with tears in his eyes, and as soon as he sees the face of a woman, he immediately becomes disgusted. From the indication of his face, I would think that he now hates sex life." In this mellow of devotional service and ghastliness, the sub-ecstatic symptoms are, we just come to that. So, feelings of disgust. It's very sort of difficult to conceive of this idea of disgust as being a type of ecstasy, or ecstasy manifesting as disgust. And the reason for that is due to our conditioning. So we confuse happiness with ecstasy, or confuse it or not confuse it, that's the only thing we can relate to it as. So we have experiences of material happiness, and then we think that also when ecstasy is being spoken about, it's the same thing. But it's a completely different substance. So Sat-Chit Ananda, this Ananda is a divine thing. It's a, and it's the basis upon which emotions are built on the spiritual platform. It doesn't exist in the material platform. Sometimes devotees say, "Wow, I'm really ecstatic." So it's a nice use of the word, but that's not what you were feeling. You were feeling happy, but you weren't feeling ecstatic. Because when you feel ecstatic, then your mind doesn't go back anymore to any kind of material things. It's all gone. So real ecstasy, that happens when one is completely liberated from material entanglement, free from any connection with material energy. And the enjoyment, the reflection of that that one experiences in the conditioned state, that's called happiness. So the abhas of Ananda is happiness. Until that realization of what spirit or spiritual life is, then it becomes very difficult to understand how such a parent, because for us we think, well, happiness or joy is a positive feeling, whereas fear or distress is a negative feeling. Because we live in the world of duality, and that's what it means for us. It means that actually there is no such thing as happiness. There's just relative degrees of misery, and therefore some the misery that we adjust ourselves to, that we can call happiness, and the stuff that's too much, that we call distress. So just like earlier on, it was getting warm in the room, so that was a source of distress. And then if it gets too cold, then that becomes a source of distress. On the other hand, you know, the cold, this type of weather is, for an Eskimo, is... it's warm, it's like a holiday. We're off to the Bahamas. Whereas for us, it's just the opposite. Send him to India and he'll die before he gets off the plane. Just from the heat, he won't be able to tolerate it. So for him, it's suffering. So what is it? Is it happiness or is it distress? Obviously, neither happiness and distress are in either heat or cold. It's just the perception or the conditioning that we have when we say something's happy, something's distressed, something's bad. But it's actually dvaita dvaita bhadragana se manudharma. This is all manudharma. It's all speculation. Now in the spiritual world, things are a little different. There's no duality. There's only one thing. Satchitananda. There's only these things. There's only spirit. Here there's spirit and matter. There there's only spirit. So everything's made of spirit. So the floor is spirit. Here the floor is in spirit. Here the floor is matter. Here this body is matter. There the floor is spirit. There the house is spirit. Everything is spiritual. The trees are spiritual. Because here this tree is also spiritual. But everything is about the tree is spiritual. Not only just the soul of the tree, but every part of the tree. So there's nothing else other than spirit in the spiritual world. So there's nothing else for distress to be made up of in the spiritual world other than Ananda. There's no distress. It's all happiness. Here it's just the opposite. So what we perceive, or what we think, oh, here's ghastliness and dreadfulness, or someone actually feels disgust. It's something that vitalizes, that gives a certain emotion that in some way or another nurtures further the Sai Baba, or the eternal relationship with Krishna. And it's made of the same stuff. It's made of the same substance, like atoms. Air is atoms. Floor is atoms. This body is atoms, whether it's hard or soft or liquid or anything, or furry or smooth, it's all made of atoms. It's the same thing. In the spiritual world, everything's made of Ananda. Sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's soft, sometimes it's disgust, sometimes it's like, but it's all the same thing. It's all bliss. So that's what it means. So sometimes we hear that, well, they're in anxiety, but at the same time, you know, just be happy forever. So which is it? I'm not going to be happy forever. It's both. You're being happy forever, but in being happy forever, their happiness is, bliss is, that you experience all of this type of variety, but it's all made of happiness. Even the distress is made of happiness. Here the happiness is made of distress, and there the distress is made of happiness. So everything is made of happiness. The disgust is made of happiness. The dread is made of happiness. The ghastliness is made of happiness. And this mellow devotional service and ghastliness, the sub-ecstatic symptoms, those which come and go, are sitting upon the consideration of one's past life. Don't do it anyway. That outside. Contorting the face, covering the nose, and washing the hands. There's also trembling of the body, forcible twisting of the body, and perspiration. Other symptoms which may be present are shame, exhaustion, madness, illusion, frustration, humility, self-pity, restlessness, eagerness, and stunning of the body. These are not reversible equations. You know, like in chemistry, certain equations are reversible, or certain chemical reactions are reversible, and some only go one way. In other words, because the sub-ecstatic symptoms of devotional service and ghastliness is frustration, that doesn't mean every time you're frustrated, you're feeling ecstasy and ghastliness. So, ecstasy and ghastliness has that as a symptom, but that doesn't mean that every time you're feeling one of these symptoms, it's that. When love for Krishna is present within the heart, then yes. When not, then no. Then the cause generally will be something else, or a combination, but it won't be the real thing. When a devotee lamenting for his past abominable activities shows special symptoms on his body, this feeling is called ecstasy and devotional service and ghastliness. This is caused by the awakening of his Krishna consciousness. This means a devotee who's passed the threshold of perfection. In this connection, there is the following statement. How can a person take pleasure in the enjoyment of sex life in this body, which is a bag of skin and bones, filled with blood and covered by skin and flesh, and which produces mucus and evil smells? End of quote. This perception is possible only for one who has awakened to Krishna consciousness and has become fully cognizant of the abominable nature of this material body. So just when you hear things like this, don't skim over words like fully cognizant. Yes. I think like that. You think like that. That's not the only criteria. The other one is you're fully cognizant of the abominable nature of this material body. A fortunate child in the womb of his mother prayed to Krishna as follows. O enemy of Kamsa, I'm suffering so much because of this material body. Now I'm trapped within a mess of blood, urine, and liquid stool within the womb of my mother. Because I'm living in such a condition, I'm suffering great pangs. Therefore, divine ocean of mercy, please be kind to me. I have no ability to engage in your loving devotional service, but please save me. There's a similar statement by a person fallen in a hellish condition of life. He addresses the Supreme Lord thus, my dear Lord, Yamaraj has placed me in a situation which is full of filthy and obnoxious smells. There are so many insects and worms surrounded by the stools left by different kinds of diseased persons. And after seeing this horrible scene, my eyes have become sore and I'm becoming really blind. I therefore pray, O my Lord, O deliver it from the hellish conditions of life. I have fallen into this hell, but I shall try to remember your holy name always. And in this way, I shall try to keep my soul and body together. This is another instance of ecstatic love for Krishna in an abominable condition. Somehow or another, this advanced devotee was falling into hell. It is to be understood that any person who is constantly engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, has attained a transcendental affection for Krishna, and as such, in any condition of life, remains satisfied simply by remembering the Lord's name in full affection and ecstatic love. In conclusion, it may be stated that ecstatic love for Krishna and ghastliness appears during the development of dormant neutrality into developed affection. Here Prabhupada makes reference to this transitional stage between what the Shantaras, what the sages experience. They experience great awe for Krishna, but there's no development of affection. And because affection isn't there, therefore they don't serve Krishna. That's the problem. If you love somebody, the natural propensity is to serve them. So how is it possible that these sages, they'll be absorbed in meditating and chanting Om, and they achieve a certain perfectional stage, but it's unripe. It's unripe because whereas they become free from all material attachment, and they've developed, they have full faith in Krishna's omnipotency, still affection hasn't really manifested. And therefore they can just sit there and do nothing. Because effectively that's what they're doing, is doing nothing. So, but there's more of that later on in the book. I'm just sure you'll come to it later. Hare Krishna.